For many women, giving birth to their first baby can be an exciting but scary experience. Now imagine doing that in a foreign country where you don't speak the language. On the show today, I'll be speaking with LaShawn Toyoda about her experience of giving birth in Japan. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Joe. And on today's show, we're going to be speaking about a topic that I know absolutely nothing about, but it's a subject that I feel is very important for any women that decide to move and live in Japan. And that is about the experience of giving birth here in Japan. And I can imagine that if for many women, I mean, that, you know, giving birth to your first child is probably a pretty scary experience to begin with. And I can imagine it's even only more scarier if you live in a country where you don't speak the language. And, you know, you've got 9 months of doctor's visits and medical checkups and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that's not exactly something you can get away with just hand signals and Google Translate, right? So I imagine that, you know, during those hospital visits, you're either wishing like you'd studied a little bit more Nihongo before you came here, or you wish you could find an English-speaking doctor. So I thought this is a pretty important subject, and my guest today is LaShawn Toyoda, who runs the website The Yokohama Life, where she writes about her experiences of living in Japan. And LaShawn came here in 2011 to teach English, and after a series of less than ideal Tinder dates, she was ready to give up completely on Tinder, but decided to go on one last date.
And my seventh year is when I met my husband. We met through Tinder. That was an interesting experience. And
that'll be the follow-up show. I should do a show about dating in Japan, actually. That would be kind of funny.
Yeah, I would not recommend Tinder to anyone. It happened to work out in the end, but it was a pretty bad experience. Yeah.
It was a bad experience meeting your husband, or the overall experience was bad?
The overall experience. I was ready to give up on Tinder. I was this is my last Tinder date. I will never check this app again. And this is it. And it worked out.
And then fate intervened.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. So we met, we got engaged 1 year later, and 1 month after our engagement, I found out I was pregnant.
Wow, that's pretty fast. Is it true that your husband told you on your first or second date that he wanted to have two babies?
Yes. That was pretty fast. I'm like, whoa. He's like, yeah, I want to have two kids. I want to carry one under each arm. And this is while we're sitting at a Starbucks on our second date. I was like, he's not wasting any time. He's like, oh, yeah, and I'm going to get a house and a car and blah, blah, blah. He's really trying to impress me.
Wow. Well, obviously it worked because you guys are still together, right?
Yeah, it definitely worked.
I'll try that on my next date. See how that goes. Hey, Midori, I want to have two babies. Are you serious? No, I'm just kidding.
It'll either work in your favor or very against you.
So I'm curious then, because, you know, I think this question kind of affects a lot of people's life in Japan, especially when you have any kind of medical issues that you have to deal with. Is how's your Japanese level?
My Japanese is conversational level. Like, I feel comfortable going to the stores, meeting people and whatnot. But when it comes to medical terminology, I was completely lost. Like, I definitely needed my husband's help, even though I tried to study it a bit. Understanding medical terms in any language, even your native language, is difficult.
Right. Okay. So you said a year and a half, you found out you were pregnant?
Yeah. After we've been together about...
Super fast.
Yeah, it was like a year and 1 month.
Your husband's got a plan. Yeah, like that's really quick.
Yeah.
So when you found out you were pregnant, were you nervous at all about giving birth in Japan?
It actually happened at kind of a bad time because I wasn't happy with the way things were going at my job. So I had planned on quitting. And so by that point I had already started applying for a new position. So I was teaching at an Eikaiwa and I applied for a university teaching position. And a couple of days after I did my interview and when I found out I got the job was when I found out I was pregnant.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was their reaction?
I didn't want to tell them.
You thought you'd hide it?
Well,
I'll hide it for 6 or 7 months, see if they notice.
But I wanted to wait until I actually at least signed the contract, for one.
Right.
And at least started working so they could kind of see, like, what kind of, you know, teacher I was before I let them know that I was pregnant and that I'd have to go on maternity leave.
What's the situation like in Japan with going on maternity leave? Like, is it the same as the States, or what's the deal?
Maternity leave in Japan is very different from the U.S., and it's different in a good way. Well, they have two kinds of leave. There's maternity leave, and then there's child care leave. And every woman who is working is guaranteed maternity leave. And that's for, I believe, it's like 3 months. It starts like a few weeks before your due date. I believe it's like 5 weeks before the date you're due to give birth, and then lasts around 8 weeks or so after the baby is actually born. So every woman gets that paid time off, which is really nice.
No matter how long you've worked at the company?
It doesn't matter how long you've worked. And it doesn't matter, like, if you're a part-time worker or a full-time worker or how much you make. What they do is they give you 60% of your salary. And they calculate that somehow based on how much you've earned, like, over the past 1 or 2 years or so.
Right, okay. Well, that's not bad then. So you found out kind of in between jobs.
Yeah.
And I take it you got the new job?
I got the new job. And I told them somewhere around my third month of pregnancy that I was pregnant. Like, I pulled my boss aside, who was like the head teacher. And I was like, I have something to tell you. And it could be good or bad news.
So surprise! She looked a little worried.
She thought I was going to quit, like on the spot or something. And so I sat her down in the room and I told her I was pregnant, and she was really excited and congratulated me. But I was so nervous about telling her that I just started crying.
Oh, no.
So then, like, people were like walking by and they saw her sitting down, sitting across from the table from me, and like, and they saw me crying. So some of the other teachers thought I was fired. They didn't know like what was going on.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah. But she took it really well. And then she pulled in like the school manager, and she was a bit less welcoming about the whole situation.
Were these both Japanese people?
So the head teacher was another foreign teacher. She's from the U.S.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And
but the big boss was Japanese.
The big boss was Japanese. Right. Yeah. And she was like an older woman.
Right.
And although she was happy for me, she wasn't happy for the school, obviously.
Right.
And basically she said, congratulations, but we can't guarantee your job when you come back, like when your pregnancy, you know, when your maternity leave is over.
Right.
And so that was a bit scary, knowing that it could potentially be out of work.
Which is actually quite common in Japan, isn't it? I think a complaint that I've heard many times is that when women go on maternity leave, no matter where they are in their career, it's pretty much the end of their job and their career at that point.
It can be. Like, maternity harassment is a thing.
Yeah.
It's usually Japanese women who are more affected by it. Like,
right.
There have been situations where they've gotten in trouble for getting pregnant before it was their turn to get pregnant.
Right. Yeah. Because, you know, in Japan, everything is scheduled. So, yeah, Sato and Megumi, you're next Tuesday. And then, yeah.
They actually have a waiting list, which is...
What? Do they really?
Well, not at my company, but I've read about some of the, you know, the black companies that there are waiting lists for women. And you have to wait your turn to get
pregnant.
That's
ridiculous. That's ridiculous. Yeah.
But in order to qualify for the child care leave, the company you're working for has to guarantee your position afterwards, once it's over. Otherwise, you can't continue receiving, you know, salary payments for up to 1 year. So when she told me they couldn't guarantee my job, that was really scary. Because although I'd still get the 3 month payments for maternity leave, I wouldn't get, you know, payments for up to 1 year from the child care leave.
Right. So what did you do then?
There was nothing I could do.
Okay.
Because as a new employee, they weren't under any obligation to, you know, guarantee that my spot would still be open.
So just a matter of telling your husband to work that overtime.
Yeah, he really did.
Be a good salary man.
Yeah. He worked a ton of overtime. Like, he worked from home as much as he could until, like, late at night, just saving up money. And he also went on paternity leave, which a lot of fathers in Japan don't do. So after the baby was born, for, like, the first month, I was home with her alone for all of October. And then from November, his paternity leave started. And he was home from November until February, which was really nice. Oh,
that's a long time. Did he face any kind of issues at work going on paternity leave?
Luckily, he didn't. But I think his situation is kind of unique because he works for an American company.
Okay.
With, you know, a branch here in Japan.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Because for those audience who don't know, paternity leave in Japan, while it's on the books, like you can legally take it. I think, What is it, like 98% of the guys don't take it? It's like a really high amount. And even the ones who do are harassed quite a bit about taking it. So.
Yes. I think it's, even recently, what I read, it's only like 5% of men take paternity leave.
Yeah.
And even less than that take like a full year.
Right. Because Japan's still got that mentality that the men should work and the women should take care of the baby. So if you show up to work and say, hey, boss, I'm going to take paternity leave, they all look at you a little bit strange.
Yeah, they do.
They're like, what? Don't you want to be like, a worker?
Well, usually like the wife would stay home and then either her mother or the mother-in-law or both would come over and help take care of the baby. But being a foreigner in Japan, that wasn't like really an option for me. Like my mom was in the U.S. So I think that's one of the reasons they didn't really give him so much of a hard time about taking that time off.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, because they knew I didn't have family members here to help me out.
When you found out you were pregnant, did you have any thoughts about where you wanted to have the baby? Like, did you think about maybe having it in the States or were you always set on having it in Japan?
The U.S. was never an option. Like, the thought never crossed my mind just because of the way healthcare works there. Like, if you don't have health insurance, and even if you do have health insurance, it's insanely expensive going to the hospital for anything in the U.S. So as soon as I found out I was pregnant, I knew for sure I was going to have my baby here.
And is your pregnancy here covered by the national health care system?
No. So it's kind of strange how it works because it's not covered by the health insurance because it's not considered an illness. So what they do instead is that they give you like these vouchers that you use to cover the expenses. And that's like from the government itself. It's some kind of like subsidy that they give you.
Like a coupon almost?
it's kind of like a coupon. Like
when you go to the doctor, you hand them this coupon and then...
Yeah, it's sort of like that. Like, first you go to your ward office and they'll give you like this packet full of these vouchers that you fill out. So you just fill out your name, your address, and your pregnancy information. And every single time you go to the clinic or the hospital, you have to hand in one of those vouchers. And so you end up still paying like a reduced fee like you would if you were using your insurance.
Right.
And then at some point you get like a partial refund of what you did pay back.
Oh, so you pay the full amount up front and then the government sends you a refund check later?
It's kind of like that. For example, like most of my normal clinic visits where it's just like to do an ultrasound and to take a urine sample, those ended up costing about 1,500 yen to about 2,000 yen. So like $15 to $20, which is pretty cheap. And that was with the voucher. But when I had to do the blood tests, which was a couple times, that was around 20,000 yen, which is like $200. So that's like how much I had to pay out of pocket.
So in this, how much is it to give birth in the States anyways? Is it like what, 10 grand or 10, $15,000 or something?
It really depends on like how much help you need. Like if it's a complicated, you know, delivery or not. I've heard as high as like $20,000.
Wow.
Like if you need a C-section and you have a long recovery.
Right.
And that's not something I could afford.
Yeah, healthcare in the States is just crazy expensive, isn't it?
Yeah. But to give birth here, like, it cost me around 800,000 yen, like at the hospital. That was my final bill, which was around $8,000.
Yeah.
But I didn't have to pay that 8,000 out of pocket. There was this big lump sum paid by the government for like 450,000 yen. And you can just fill out the application form and they'll send that money directly to the hospital and it'll just be deducted from your total. And for most births in Japan, that'll cover like nearly the full cost of it.
What is that lump sum payment for? That's different than the coupon system? Or that's
completely different. Like the whole system is really confusing.
Yeah, welcome to
even
Japan.
For Japanese people.
yeah, no kidding. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. But it's a form you get sometime around your third trimester. And not only do you have to fill it out, but your job also has to fill out a portion of it as well. And then you submit that to the hospital and then they receive the money from the government.
So that is just for the birth, covering your
just
hospital stay. Okay, okay.
Yeah. And if you have like a normal delivery, like if you don't have a C-section, and this also if you don't have an epidural, then you can almost have your baby for free. That'll cover most of it.
Yeah. Wow, interesting. So the total cost for you is about, say, $8,000. You said the government covered about $4,500. So about $3,500 is what you guys had to pay out of your own pocket.
Well, also, there's gift money in Japan. So your company, usually in Japan, your company will give you like a congratulatory gift money for having the baby.
No kidding.
Oh, really? But you have to fill out an application for that.
Of course you do. Of course you do. It's Japan. Hey, I'm pregnant. Here's 18 forms you have to fill out.
Yeah. So in most cases, as long as you've been with your company for at least a year, which didn't apply to me, but still applied to my husband.
Right.
You are eligible for this gift money from your company. And I think that was somewhere around like an extra 30,000 to 40,000 yen. So if both of you can apply for that, then you can get like around an extra 80,000 yen from your company just as a present.
So for you then, you're down to just over 30,000, right? Or just over 300,000 yen?
Yeah, around in that ballpark.
About like $3,000 or so. So quite a bit of a difference than, say, 20 grand in the States.
Exactly. Much more manageable and like doable for us. Yeah.
Just got to go through all the paper. Could you have done all this paperwork and all this without?
No. Definitely not.
That's when you're like relying on the husband?
It was giving him a headache just trying to understand. And my company didn't even know what to do. I was the first teacher they ever had that got pregnant.
Oh, no kidding. Wow.
Yeah, because all of the other women, like most of the women there, like the Japanese staff, they were all mothers, but they all had children before they joined the company.
Right. Okay.
So I was the first staff member to actually get pregnant while, you know, working for them. And they were like going back and forth, trying to figure out how the maternity leave even worked. And it was just chaotic.
It's so weird how they make everything so complicated. Even the Japanese find it complicated. So it always makes me wonder, like, who's making these things complicated on the other end? You know, like, just boggles my mind. So did you have any trouble finding an English-speaking doctor?
Yes and no. When I first found out I was pregnant, it was just through a take-home pregnancy test that I bought at the drugstore. But then I went to the Bluff Clinic in Yokohama, which is an English-speaking clinic, to get a blood test to confirm it. And there the doctor speaks, you know, fluent English, and he was able to do the ultrasound for me. So I was able to see the baby for the first time, and he explained everything to me in English. And I would have continued going there, except, you know, it's just like a general clinic. It didn't specialize in pregnancy or childbirth or anything. Plus, I had moved to Tokyo with my husband, so it was a bit too far for me to go to.
Right.
But the part of Tokyo I live in is really kind of like the countryside. Like, I'm surrounded by farmers and stuff. And all of the clinics here are just entirely in Japanese. They don't speak any English whatsoever. So the ladies' clinic that I went to, that's what they're called, the doctors only speak Japanese. And they were really patient with me, and they tried to, like, simplify it, like, the Japanese that they used. But it was still a bit challenging, like, when I had to ask them questions if I wanted to know something specifically. My husband had to help me out with that.
Right. Is there, like, a specialized clinic here that you go to when you're pregnant?
There is. Well, you can go to either a big general hospital, or you can go to, like, a small, what they call a ladies' clinic.
Right.
And it's basically just, like, a gynecologist. Like, they do all kinds of services. And so you can get, like, your normal, regular pregnancy checkups done there. So if it's just, like, a regular ultrasound or blood test or urine test, you can get it done there, which is where I went to for most of my pregnancy, just because it's so close to my home. Right. I could get there within 20 minutes, do everything, and then be back home. But for actually giving birth, it has to be done at a hospital. And there are the public hospitals and the private hospitals. And you have to decide really early on what kind of childbirth you want to have. If you want to get an epidural, or if you want to have a private room, these are decisions you have to make, like, really early on, like in your first trimester of the pregnancy.
How can you make that decision? Like, are you, like, what are you basing that on? Like, is just, like, the comfort of the place, or, like, because obviously you don't know, is your birth going to be complicated? Is it going to be easy? Or how do you make that kind of decision so early?
Well, at first I was so sure I was going to have, like, an all natural birth, just because it was, like, cheaper, and the hospital I was at was, like, a pretty good hospital. But I heard some horror stories from some other mothers.
You probably listened to Ashley's show and you're like, screw that, load me up with the dope.
Yeah, actually my boss, the one who I told first that I was pregnant, she told me about how she was in labor for, like, over 24 hours and she didn't get an epidural. And it was, like, the worst experience of her life.
I'll bet.
And she was like, I'm going to tell you one thing and please listen. Get the epidural. So I was like, okay.
Is it common in Japan to give an epidural?
No, and it's really hard to find a hospital that will let you get one if you're not having a C-section. In my area, there were only, like, 3 hospitals anywhere close, like, within, like, an hour of travel time. So there's, like, a waiting list that you have to sign up for. And if you wait until, like, your second or third trimester, it's going to be too late to even get into the hospital. So you really need to decide either before you get pregnant or before the first trimester is over if you're going to go through with a natural birth or not.
You know, this may be a strange question, because obviously I don't have a kid. I actually don't plan to have any kids. But why wouldn't a woman get an epidural? Like, it just seems like such a painful experience.
Yeah.
Why would you not get an epidural?
The thing about Japan is that they want the birth to be natural, and they view the epidural as adding an unnecessary risk, because there is a lot of risk involved in getting one. Unless it's absolutely necessary, like for a C-section, the doctors won't give it to you, even if you beg for it, if you're at, you know, a hospital that doesn't offer it.
Wow. Okay. So something that they have to decide very early on.
Yeah.
You start making arrangements for that early. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. And to go back to what you asked, like, how do you choose a hospital? Definitely take a tour of the hospital. Many of them offer that. But also kind of ask, like, what their policy is during the recovery period. Because I didn't realize just how different the recovery period is depending on which kind of hospital you choose. The one that I went to, a private hospital, was really nice. Like, everything was taken care of for me. I didn't have to worry about anything. If I ever needed help with the baby, all I had to do is pick up a phone, and a nurse was there in my room within, like, a minute. But some of my friends who gave birth in public hospitals, they had to share rooms with other mothers, and they weren't allowed to leave their baby long enough to just go to the restroom. And I was pretty shocked by just the difference in, like, the level of help and care that you get depending on which hospital you do choose.
Wow. Is the cost difference significant between the private and public hospitals?
For a public hospital, If you go with like a shared room and no epidural, it's going to be around 400,000 yen.
About four grand.
But with the private ones, it can be anywhere from like 600,000 yen to like up to a million. Depending on how nice the hospital is, right, what kind of services they offer, and what kind of care that you want. Yeah.
So it is like almost double. It could be more than double, actually, to go from a public hospital to a private hospital.
Yeah, it can be.
The cost difference is quite substantial.
It's huge. Like even the one that I went to, I had a private room that was just for myself, but they did have an option with like a room with two beds, so your husband could stay there as well. That included like full meals for the husband and everything. And that was like significantly more expensive.
So you guys opted for private room in a private hospital?
Yeah. So we offered for the private room with a single bed in the hospital.
Right. Okay. Wow. And then can you tell us in as much detail as you are comfortable, what was your actual delivery experience like? Because I read about you, I read it on your website, and I'm like, good Lord, does that ever sound scary?
Yeah, so I do have an article written about my labor and delivery story on my website.
Yeah.
And basically, I cover like the whole entire journey from like getting to the hospital, going through labor, and just the shock that I kind of went through.
Do you think it was, let me ask you this. Do you think your experience would have been any different in the States? Was there any kind of like language or cultural issues that may have contributed to your experience being quite a bit different here?
Yes, definitely. I think all of the negativity I experienced was just due to the fact that I couldn't talk to anyone about how I felt about what I was going through.
Right.
Like the doctors and the staff were absolutely amazing. Like they did everything right. They took really great care of me, but I was just going through so much like anxiety and depression and all of that just kind of like built up to that moment. So that whole day I was just like terrified.
Terrified of like what was going to happen, or you weren't able to communicate, or
I was terrified about what was going to happen. One because of the pain, and also I was terrified about getting the epidural. Like I was afraid I wouldn't understand the doctor's instructions, or that I would move or something and I would end up paralyzed. I had all these fears just like running through my mind, but I didn't say anything about it to the doctors or nurses. So I just kind of like let it bottle up inside of me.
Right.
Which is, I wouldn't recommend. Yeah. But basically that day, we had scheduled my induction to be 2 weeks before when my baby was actually due. And so my husband had a taxi and everything ready to come pick me up and take me to the hospital. And once we got there, it was just like a really short check-in process. They showed me to my room. And I got dressed in the special hospital clothes and everything. And then I went to see the doctor. And that's when I was induced. And, oh, my God. Like, I thought, like, the labor and the delivery part would be the most painful thing of the whole experience. Or, like, maybe the epidural would be the most painful thing. But, honestly, getting induced was the worst pain I had ever felt in my life.
Can you tell us what that is? Because there's something like some people, you know, obviously in as much detail as you feel comfortable, but
yeah.
I mean, like I didn't know until I read your blog, like what that actually meant. Like I just honestly thought they kind of like massage your stomach or something. Like, that's not, like literally what I thought. And then when I read your blog and you're like, you asked the nurse if it hurt and she's like, chotto, just a little.
Yeah.
And that proves to be like the understatement of the decade.
Like, I'm comfortable sharing this, but I'm sorry for anyone who is squeamish. You might not want to listen. But for my induction, they used something called like a Foley bulb. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. And basically, they insert like this long tube with like a little balloon attached on the end of it. And then that little balloon is like inserted into like the opening of your cervix. And they like blow the balloon up to kind of force it open, and the pain is like just, I can't describe it. It was horrific. It was just terrible. I think I like cried and screamed a bit more during the induction than I did during the actual delivery.
Yeah, that just sounds horrific.
I'm sorry.
I'm like cringing myself.
Yeah.
When that, I'm sure other women have had that procedure as well. Mm-hmm. Normally, when they do that, do they give you an epidural before that, or is it common to like to go through that and experience that pain, or what?
So I thought they would give the epidural before, so I was really shocked when they didn't. And I spoke with a couple other mothers, and it was the same for them as well. Like even some of the mothers in the U.S. also described getting induced that way, like without any kind of pain relief.
Wow, that's crazy. Why do they have to induce you 2 weeks early? Why can't you wait the 2 weeks and just like have the baby normally?
You can have the baby normally, but the problem with signing up with a private hospital and the fact that they have a waiting list means they try to schedule everything as much as possible. So they know exactly when you'll be in there and when you'll be out.
No kidding. So you had to go in there on that date because that's when they have you scheduled.
I didn't have to, but it was very strongly encouraged.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's so Japan, you know, like, yeah, okay, your baby is scheduled for Thursday at 4:27 p.m.
Like, exactly.
On the dot, right? Like,
they said, we're going to schedule you for September 25th at 3 p.m.
That's insane. I'm surprised that they wouldn't just wait until you, like, could just go start giving birth naturally or something.
Yeah, and I kind of had mixed feelings about that. Like, I did want to just wait until my body and my baby was ready.
Right, yeah.
It would have been a lot easier on both of us if we didn't have to force it so soon. Like, I wasn't dilated at all, so
yeah.
It was just way too early for me. And I think next time if I have a baby in Japan, I'm going to wait. I'm not going to let the doctors pressure me into having the baby 2 weeks early. Yeah.
If some woman is listening to this and probably is horrified and is like crossing her legs right now, and she's like, no way I'm doing this Foley bulb thingy. Forget that.
Yeah.
What can she tell the hospital to say, like, I'm going to wait until my body is ready?
Just tell the hospital that you want to wait for your due date. And they'll at least let you wait until like a couple days afterwards before they're like, okay, we kind of have to get things moving along for the safety of the baby. But just be very clear, like, that you want to have it on the date that it's due and no sooner if possible.
And then what would happen? So it's like you went into labor at home, you just go to the hospital on that day and they'd have your room ready for you, or you go a couple of days before the expected delivery date, or how's that work?
Then they would have everything ready, but then you kind of run into a bit of trouble like getting to the hospital. Like if you don't have a car and you're taking the pregnancy taxi, they really want to know if you're already in labor or not, because that puts a lot of pressure on the taxi driver, especially if your hospital is kind of far away or if there's like a traffic jam or something like that. You could end up giving birth in the taxi, which our taxi driver said has happened to him before.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess it kind of depends on where you are, right? Because if you're in the Inaka, the hospital might be further away, but there'll be significantly less traffic.
Yeah.
If you live in like Azabu or somewhere downtown Tokyo, like the taxi might actually take longer than the train.
Yeah.
So you have to really kind of consider how you're going to get to the hospital as quickly as possible.
And also, if you've had a baby before, usually your next baby is going to come much quicker. So you could have your water break and within like an hour or two, your baby could already, you know, be there. So you kind of have to be careful about the timing.
Right. Okay. Wow. Interesting. So they stick this bulb in you to try to induce labor. Do they just leave it in you or do they like pump
it
up?
They leave it in there. Ugh. So it stayed in there overnight.
Overnight?
Was awful.
Oh my God.
I didn't have my baby until the next day.
That's insane.
It was awful. They're like, okay, so just go back to your room and try to get some rest. Like I couldn't even walk. I was waddling in pain back to my room and like just sitting down on my bed. Like I had to like sit down slowly and like kind of like roll over. It was so excruciating. And I don't know how they expect anyone to sleep with that thing stuck in there. Like, it's just, it's not possible.
Yeah. But they don't give you the epidural at that point? So they only do it when you have your delivery?
They didn't give me the epidural till the next morning. I believe it was after. No, the Foley bulb was still in. But the next morning, they took me to the room with the doctor. And they inserted the epidural. But I don't know if it's because of, like, my size. Like, I'm much bigger than, like, a typical Japanese woman. But the epidural didn't have a full effect on me. So when they went to remove the Foley bulb, I shouldn't have felt anything.
Ugh.
But I felt it all.
Ugh, that's just so horrific. Good Lord.
It was horrible.
It's like when they go to the dentist and they put the Novocaine in your mouth and they bring that drill and you're just thinking in the back of your head, like, am I going to feel this? Like, you better pump me up. Like, God, I would have asked like 10x the amount, you know, like.
Yeah. The nurse was really surprised and quite shocked. Like when I felt the pain and she's like, oh, you shouldn't have felt that. Something's not right.
You think?
So she went back to the doctor. And they talked a bit and they took me back to the room and he actually removed the epidural tube that was stuck in my back and he reinserted it to try again and it didn't improve. So I still felt a lot of pain.
So the epidural is like a needle that goes into your spine, right? And then I guess like some numbing liquid is flowing into there or something like that?
Yeah, kind of. So they have a needle that they put into the spine. But what that needle does is allow them to insert a tube. And once the tube is inserted, they pull the needle out. So you just have this thin plastic tube that's sticking out of your back.
Right.
They can attach that tube to inject the medicine.
The drug. Okay.
Yeah. But the problem is that the dosage in Japan that they typically do is much, much lower than what they do in the U.S.
Right. Yeah, I'll bet. So, I mean, you got like a 90-pound Japanese girl who's tiny as hell. So one aspirin could probably knock her out, right? So, Gaijin women listening to this, if you go to the hospital, tell them to crank that sucker up. You know, like, give me 3 times the amount.
I wanted a pain-free delivery, but that was not what I got. I got maybe like a 60% reduced pain delivery.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that all the male audience of the podcast are freaking out and running away from home, and all
they've
the women are
listening.
Like, yeah, and the women are like booking flights out of Japan. Tell us about the aftercare. So after your baby was born and you're in the private room, what was that like? What was the food like? What was the nurse care like?
Honestly, it was very, very good. And it made me like so glad that I did choose to have my baby in Japan. So the first night, like after I had my daughter, they took her off to the nursery and I was able to just rest in my room and recover because at that point it had been 31 hours between when it had been induced and when she was actually born. So the nurses took care of her. And then the next, like throughout the night, they came and checked on me. Like they checked on how well I was healing, what my temperature was like and everything. They just came into my room quietly and checked on me. And then the next morning, they took me to the nursery to see my baby and they sat me down and they taught me how to breastfeed her and everything, which was really nice. So I got some one-on-one help from the nurse and then I was able to bring her back to my room with me. But anytime I needed a break, one of the nurses would just take her back to the nursery so I could rest up on my own. And they had an option for the meals. You could either have the meals brought to your room or you could eat in a cafeteria with the other mothers so you can kind of socialize a bit so you wouldn't feel alone. But I tried that the first day and I was in so much pain and so much discomfort that I couldn't focus on speaking Japanese well.
Right.
Yeah. So I was like, you know what? Screw this. I'm just going to eat in my room. So I asked the nurse to bring my meals to my room for me. That was no issue. So 3 times a day, they would bring in my, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The food was fantastic. It was like better than anything I could cook. So that was really nice. Like the pictures and stories you hear about the food at the maternity hospitals is all true. It's like really wonderful meals. And so that was nice, not having to worry about anything. They sent in a cleaning lady each day. She cleaned my room for me and she cleaned my bathroom. She cleaned the baby bottles and like brought me some fresh ones. And she bought me like fresh robes and everything. So I literally didn't have to work at all. I just had to like stay in bed, relax, and enjoy the recovery.
Wow. During this whole process, like your delivery and everything, how much was your husband allowed to be beside you? Like, is he in the delivery room? Is he not? What's the deal like that with that in Japan?
So if you're having a normal delivery, like without any complications, your husband can be in there the whole time with you. But if you have a C-section, I heard that they kick your husband out. Like usually in the U.S., they'll like have like a curtain and your husband can stay in the room as long as he like sits on the other side of the curtain.
Right.
But at this hospital, at least, they've had too many issues with men passing out. Like when they see like, you know, all of the blood and everything.
Right.
So if they're going to have a C-section, they make the husband sit and wait outside.
Right.
But since I had a normal delivery, my husband was there and he saw like, he said it was an absolute bloodbath. Like he could not believe how much blood there was. But he watches a lot of movies. So he was somewhat, you know, kind of immune to it. But yeah.
Oh. And then when you're in your recovery, does your husband stay in the same room with you? Like, can he sleep in the same room or does he go back to the house or what?
He can sleep in the same room if you opt to pay for that kind of service.
Okay.
If you pay for one of the more expensive private rooms and then they'll have like a double bed or two beds set up in the room for you. Otherwise, your husband has to kind of stick to the visitation hours, which are kind of short. I believe it's from around 10 o'clock in the morning until 8 p.m. at night for my hospital, but for some of the other hospitals, it might be a bit shorter than that.
Oh, okay, okay. And then how long were you in the hospital for after you had your baby?
I stayed there for 4 nights, and then on the 5th day, I returned home, and I think that's a pretty typical amount of time. As long as you don't have any complications, most women will stay there for like around 5 days.
Okay. And then once you're at home, are there any like support services from either the hospital, the ward, your work or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Usually when you first arrive home, that's when your mother and mother-in-law will come over and help take care of you for like that first month.
Okay. Right.
But I didn't really have that.
Right.
So actually my husband's coworker was really nice. She came over and stayed like a couple days to help me out. And also my younger sister, who lives on one of the military bases, she came and took care of me for like a week as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There's nothing from the city or the ward? Like there's no home care worker or anything like that?
What you can do, they do have like a couple services. They have like a cleaning service where they'll send someone over to like cook meals for you and clean the home. They don't stay, but they'll come and do the work, make sure you have enough food, and then they'll leave. They also have like counselors who can come and talk to you if you say that you need help. But the problem is that those services are only usually offered in Japanese. So if you're comfortable with, you know, speaking Japanese really well and you can express like your feelings and what you're going through, then that might be a really good option. But like I said, I have conversational Japanese, but I can't really talk about my feelings that well, so I didn't really opt for it. But about a month after my baby was born, like suddenly two women arrived at my house from the ward office. They just like knocked on my door to like come and check in on me and see how I was doing. I was like really surprised. And they're like, do you need any help with anything? Are you experiencing, you know, any problems, any kind of negativity? Is there anything we can do? And I should have said, yes, I need help, but I didn't want to deal with like the language barrier. So I was just like, oh, no, things are fine. Thanks.
What kind of help did you need?
I had a lot of problem with anxiety, like from going from being in a hospital where everything was taken care of for me to like suddenly being home and not having a lot of help at all was a big change. And it's quite scary. Like, I think for any first-time parent, it's going to be scary, right, no matter what. Even if you have a very easy pregnancy and easy delivery, it's a big adjustment being a new parent, and you don't know what to expect, and you're not going to know for a while. You have to, you know, spend time figuring out what works for you and your partner and your baby. So yeah,
that's why it's always a miracle that firstborn children survive, you know, like,
yeah.
Baby number two and three have got a lot easier, but I think a lot of parents, like, they probably don't admit it, but they're in the back of their mind, they're like, whoa, I'm glad our first child survived.
It's amazing, like, a lot of first children don't end up screwed up somehow.
Is there any kind of, like, gaijin support group or anything like that in Japan?
Yeah, interestingly enough, like, me and a couple of other mothers on Twitter managed to find each other, like other mothers in Japan. And so we started this like Mommy in Japan support group, and we all keep in touch through like a line group. But also there's like a Facebook group for women who are pregnant in Tokyo. And it's a little bit hard to join. You have to kind of fill out an application before they'll let you in. And I really wanted to be more involved in that, but it was only available on weekdays, and I was still working while I was pregnant, so I couldn't really join in. So that's why the line group has been really helpful for me, because I can just send them a message and ask some questions anytime, and they're really supportive.
Yeah, I guess for any foreign women here, like, finding that kind of support network is really vital, and especially one that you can communicate naturally in your own language, right? Like, whether your language, yeah, is English, French, whatever, Chinese or whatever, like, that language barrier, with, unless you of course speak fluent Japanese, but just being able to communicate with someone without having to worry about the language issue is, mm-hmm, such a huge relief, isn't it?
It is. It really is. And they can give like so many, you know, recommendations and information that would have been hard for me to find out on my own. So it's really nice having other foreign mothers who are, you know, going through the same thing that you're going through.
Right, right. Okay. So then the big question is, going back to the start of this interview, when your husband said he wanted two kids,
yeah,
is that, having gone through this now, are you still on board for having another child? Or are you like, nope, that's it, that's one is enough?
I'm still on board for baby number two.
Are you really?
I am. Man. And as traumatic as it was, I think it'll be a lot easier the second time, because at least now I know exactly what to expect. I know what's going to happen. There aren't going to be like any like huge surprises. So even though it'll still hurt like crazy, at least I'm mentally prepared now.
Thanks again to LaShawn for coming on the show. And if you want to find out more about her life in Japan, you can do so on her website at theyokohamalife.com, where she has some lovely photos of her baby. You can go check that out. Also, if you're interested in the cost breakdown that we talked about, I've put all the numbers on the show notes of this episode, which you can find on my website at tokyopodcast.com. Might be a little bit easier to kind of get an idea of what things cost when you can kind of see it broken down like that, instead of, you know, trying to write it down quickly while you're listening to the show. So check that out. And you know what, the one other thing too is having a strong support network, I think, is really vital for anyone going through a pregnancy here in Japan. You know, pregnancy is obviously one of those things that it really helps to have someone else who's maybe gone through it, or can translate, or even just offer some emotional support, you know, during that process. I think for a lot of expats living in a foreign country, sometimes it's hard to find someone who you can kind of lean on when you need to. And I really think that for a lot of expats, finding someone who comes from your home country is really helpful and vital when you need that kind of emotional support. Like, let's face it, you know, I think a lot of foreigners, we kind of get lumped into one big group here in Japan. Like, we're all just the gaijin. But, you know, someone from America may not necessarily have anything in common with someone from France or Germany or Italy, or vice versa. So I think, like, finding someone from your home country is really important when you're going through a situation where you need that emotional support. So the group that she mentioned that she had kind of difficulty registering with is called the Tokyo's Mothers Group. And The Tokyo Mothers Group is actually interesting because they've been around a long time. And I actually interviewed one of the founder a long time ago when I did my first show about giving birth in Japan with Ashley way back in 2012 or 13 or whenever that was. So the group's been around a long time. They have a very large database of members on their Facebook group. The only challenge with their group, as LaShawn mentioned, is their website is it's a Japanese website. So it's like a relic of the past. It's really out of date and it's overly complicated, way more than it needs to be. But you know what? That's just part of the Japanese experience. But if you can go through all that and register and join their Facebook group, I think you'll be able to find a lot of support and through the membership on their Facebook group. So I'll also post a link to their website on the show notes of this episode as well. And one last thing is I'm thinking about doing a show on dating. I think it would actually be kind of fun to hear everyone's dating experiences here in Japan. Just like LaShawn mentioned that, you know, she went through all these horrific Tinder dates and like the last one was like, okay, this is it. And then she met her husband. So I think it would be kind of fun to compile a list of like everyone's dating experiences and then like make one big show about it. We can all laugh at it maybe on like Valentine's or something like that. So if you have like a funny, romantic, horrific, you know, outrageous dating story that you're willing to share with the entire world, email me off the website, and once I have a bunch of them, I'll compile them into a show and release it. And I think it could be a lot of fun. Anyways, that's it. That wraps up this episode of the Tokyo Podcast. I want to thank everybody for listening. I'm your host, Anthony Joe, and talk to you next week. Bye-bye.